The headlines: 6 Palestinians are killed and dozens more injured during a fresh Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Russia says the U.S. is creating global chaos by not honoring its security commitments one day after announcing the suspension of a major nuclear treaty. Also in the headlines, the daughter of slain black American civil rights activist Malcolm X announces a plan to sue the FBI and the CIA for his assassination in 1965. This is Mnius. It's good to have you with us. At least 6 Palestinians have been killed and dozens more injured in a fresh Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Clashes between the regime troops and Palestinian resistance fighters are said to be ongoing in the city. Palestinian officials say the injured, some of them in critical condition, have been transferred to the hospital. Regime forces have intensified the crackdown, illegal detention of Palestinians, and the demolition of their homes across the occupied territories with the formation of a new far-right Israeli cabinet. At least 57 Palestinians have been killed by the regime in the West Bank alone since the turn of the year. Hundreds of Palestinians have also been languishing in Israeli jails for years without charge or trial. Mazen Gubseya is a Palestinian scientist and author. We asked him about how he views the recent wave of Israeli violence against Palestinians.
This will only increase the determination for resistance among the Palestinians. The Israeli government is really acting as expected, as a fascist, extreme right-wing government would be expected to act, and we only expect the worst from them. But it's time for the international community to stop being nice to this regime. This is an apartheid, racist regime. And so it's really the international community's responsibility to act and support people under oppression. The international community supports Israel. There are governments like the United States and the United Arab Emirates that are supporting and funding the Israeli occupation to do the horrific things that they are doing to our people. It is rather sick. We consider them partners in crime, basically. Now, why do they do it? They do it very simply because there's a very strong Zionist lobby around the world that promises them various things, especially keeping their regimes in power.
A funeral ceremony has been held in the Iranian capital, Tehran, for the former Palestinian ambassador to Iran, Salah Zawawi, who passed away on Monday. Zawawi was laid to rest in Behesht Zahra, Tehran's largest cemetery. The veteran diplomat served as the Palestinian ambassador to Tehran for 42 years. He was the second Palestinian envoy to Iran after the Islamic Revolution, succeeding Hani al-Hassan. He passed away at the age of 85 in a Tehran hospital after a prolonged illness. Zawawi was the longest-serving Palestinian ambassador to Iran. Our correspondent Gisumish Ahmadi earlier joined us from the Behesht Zahra Cemetery in Tehran to tell us more about Salah Zawawi and his diplomatic life.
Only a year ago, his daughter replaced him as the ambassador of Palestine to Tehran. He was also a staunch supporter of the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini. There are lots and lots of quotes of him regarding comments that he has made about what Imam Khomeini has said, particularly Iran's support for the Palestinian nation. It is also important to note that Salah Zawawi was one of the founding members of the Fatah movement, which is among the resistance movements and freedom fighters, freedom fighting groups in Palestine. Also, he did mention that it was very important on the part of the late Imam Khomeini to form the axis of resistance in the region.
The granddaughter of Salah Zawawi talked to our correspondent about the late Palestinian envoy's family and diplomatic life.
My grandfather was not just a leader and an ambassador. He wasn't just great at his job. He was a great person at home with his family. He was a great father. He was a great grandfather. And he was a great friend. He will be missed because, honestly, his presence was such a great influence for all of us. He was lovely, he was funny, he was motivational, and he was strong. So I hope he's in a better place. He was not in a good health condition, so I'm glad he's in a better place now and he's not suffering anymore. So today is a very sad day for all of us. And as his granddaughter, honestly, our relationship was very special together, and I really love him, and he will be missed, truly.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says Tehran respects Iraq's territorial integrity, as well as supporting peace and stability in the Arab country. Amir Abdollahian said that the Iranian and Iraqi people have a lot in common, adding that they are one nation in two independent geographical areas. He said that Iran hopes the Iraqi government would never allow the country to turn into a stage for attacks against neighboring countries, including Iran. The top diplomat also hailed the Iraqi parliament's resolution to expel foreign forces from the country. Amir Abdollahian said that he discussed security issues during a meeting with his Iraqi counterpart, Fuad Hussein. The Iranian foreign minister is on a two-day official visit to the neighboring country. Iran has summoned the British Charge d'Affaires to protest what it called unfounded accusations leveled against Tehran. The foreign ministry told the UK envoy that the accusations are part of an Iranophobia policy, urging London to stop its unfriendly approach. The UK government has accused Iran of posing a threat to journalists on British soil and has summoned the Iranian envoy on Monday. Britain and the EU have also imposed several rounds of sanctions against Iran over what they call a crackdown on protests in recent months. They announced the latest such measures this week. On Tuesday, Tehran hit back, targeting dozens of UK and EU individuals and entities with sanctions. Iran says the EU and Britain back terror groups working against its security. Talks between Tehran and the three remaining signatories to the 2015 Iran deal have been stalled since September. Now the U.S. says that the ball is in Iran's court to find a way out of the deadlock. In our news review program, we discuss the issue with our guests.
And now it's time for this hour's news review. The U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says it is up to Iran to resolve the deadlock over its nuclear program.
We continue to believe that with regard to the nuclear program, the most effective, sustainable way to deal with the challenge it poses is through diplomacy. But in this moment, those efforts are on the back burner because Iran is simply not engaged in a meaningful way. But the door is always open to diplomacy going forward. But a lot depends on what Iran says and does and whether or not it engages.
Blinken made the comments during a visit to Athens. He accused Tehran of failing to engage and said the nuclear agreement, known as the JCPOA, was not on the table anymore. The deal was thrown into chaos when the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed sanctions. The Biden administration spoke of willingness to revive the agreement, but talks were deadlocked in September. Tehran has repeatedly stressed that the JCPOA's revival depends on the verifiable removal of U.S. sanctions and guarantees that Washington will not abandon the accord again. Iran believes a strong and stable deal can still be finalized if the United States adopts a realistic approach. I'd like to welcome my guest to this news review. Fuad Izzadi, professor of University of Tehran and political analyst out of Tehran, and Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it in Tehran. Fuad, your overall perspective on what Blinken has said today.
You know, we have a lot of contradictions when it comes to American officials talking about the nuclear agreement. We have this recent statement about U.S. being open to returning to the agreement. Just a few days ago, we had the same individual, Antony Blinken, talking about the idea that returning to the agreement is not a priority for the United States. They had a failed color revolution scheme in Iran for a number of months. It seems at least this particular American official has realized that the Islamic Republic is here to stay. The idea of overthrowing the government is not working out. We don't live in 1953. They're talking about JCPOA again. On the other side, we have the Iranian officials that look at Americans' actions and statements and realize that the other side is not serious about returning to the agreement. And the main reason is because of difficulties in Washington. You have major political forces, both in the U.S. Congress and within the Biden administration, that don't like the 2015 agreement. But instead of saying that clearly, they have started a blame game, and Blinken is engaging in that blame game.
Well, Frank, your perspective on what's going on. I mean, we have seen a very intense effort, of course, over the last 6 months to once again bring about what the West call regime change in Iran. At the same time, Iran has had negotiations and dealing with the JCPOA, but of course, the Iranians say that it has to be something that they have guarantees. And now today, Blinken has said this. Is this a sign that really they know that there is not much else that they can do against Iran? They've tried so much, and it shows the type of frustration on their part. Your analysis.
Well, I think to begin with, you can't really believe a word that is said by anyone who is a representative of the American administration. You don't have to go back too far in history with the Minsk agreements just to be seen or to show that both France and Germany, who went guarantors on those agreements, that Kiev would stand by those accords with Russia and the Donbass republics, so that was all just a false ruse. It was a lie. It was a facade. It was used to garner time to rearm and to refinance the Ukrainian fascist coup regime that took over in 2014. So if you see that on one side, you can actually see the talks about the JCPOA rejuvenation as a distraction, as actually being used by the Biden administration to detract from what they had been planning to do, which is a continuation of their regime change anti-revolutionary stance from 1979. And, you know, to put it in context, if we look back to 2018, Jared Kushner was Donald Trump's son-in-law. The Kushner family are great friends of Israel and are financial donors to projects within Israel. 2018 was the 70th anniversary of the birth of the State of Israel from 1948. And Donald Trump went, I believe, to the Golan Heights, which is illegally occupied Syrian territory, occupied by the Israelis, and said that he was in favor of Israeli settlements and that the Golan Heights were, you know, de facto permanently a part of the expanded Israeli apartheid entity. And he also moved the Tel Aviv American embassy to Jerusalem on the 14th of May in 2018. And I personally left Belfast and went to Jerusalem and stood in protest with Palestinians and others against the moving off, actually recognizing al-Quds as, you know, the head of the Israeli state. So, I mean, 2018, Trump caused all this by becoming such a stalwart friend and associate of Israel. Biden is a warmonger. He's not interested in peace, and neither is his administration. They want conflict. They want war. They want aggression, and they want total control over the resources of other countries through American imperialism.
All right, and on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me. Fouad Ezzadi, professor, University of Tehran, journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast, Frank Hughes.
In Greece, anti-war protesters and activists have held a rally in the capital, Athens, to denounce the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's visit to the country.
Because they are an imperialist country that puts their nose everywhere, like they interfere all across the globe and do imperialism because they're imperialists, and we're against imperialism. And both here in Greece, in Ukraine, in the Middle East, everywhere where imperialism happens, and we want to fight against imperialism.
The protesters, with banners and signs displaying anti-NATO slogans, gathered outside of the U.S. Embassy. They accused Washington of meddling in Greece's affairs and pushing the country to get involved in the Ukraine conflict. They called on their government to avoid being part of the war and demanded the closure of foreign military bases in Greece. Blinken arrived in Athens on Monday. He held talks with senior Greek officials, including the Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis and the Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias, on issues like security and energy. Well, you can see the death toll has risen, including the number of Palestinians injured as a result of the raid by Israeli regime forces in Nablus. It has now reached 9, based on what we have, along with 100 injured. So the Israeli raid at this point has resulted in the death of 9 Palestinians and 100 injured. This is a developing story, and we're keeping a close eye on it. So any additional information we'll make sure to give to you. NATO and the European Union accused Russia of escalating tensions over Ukraine after Moscow suspended participation in the New START arms control treaty. This is while Moscow insists that the West is to blame for the Ukraine conflict. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. Tourism. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are with you with the second episode of the new series, Food Tourism. In the first episode, we talked about food tourism in general and said that Iran is one of the richest countries in the number of foods and drinks. Today, we are going to talk more about the Iranian foods and cuisine and make you familiar with a few Iranian foods. Hope you'll enjoy it. Food culture is a set of habits and customs originated in the culture of every nation and ethnicity. Alongside folklore, myths, music, arts, scripts, clothes, and habits, food is an index of history and culture of that particular nation and ethnicity. Iran has a broad variety of subcultures, and this makes it colorful in every aspect of culture. For sure, climate variety has been effective in this regard. Thus, the taste of the northern people differs that of the south, and that is true for the people of the west and the east of the country. For instance, the cities near the sea are more familiar with seafood, while those busy in animal husbandry more like the dishes made from livestock and vegetables. As it was said earlier, there are over 2,600 foods, desserts, and drinks in Iran. This has made Iran one of the richest nations in the field of foods and drinks. It was also said that Iran's culinary method is the third famous method after the Chinese and Roman ones. Perhaps the current modern lifestyle has dragged people towards fast foods. But Iranians still prefer the traditional way of making cooking dishes, which is based on patience and take time to prepare. In other words, Iranians wait for rice to become steamed and the stew to fully cook. The Iranian culinary art is very fine and requires full attention, just like the Iranian carpet. This genuine art has grown among rural and civic people during the past centuries. A brief look at the Iranian tablecloth makes it clear that food is very valuable among Iranians. Speaking of the Iranian food and cuisine is indeed speaking of food variety and a set of customs, traditions, and beliefs which have bequeathed to us from generation to generation. Among these customs and beliefs, mention can be made of sitting together around a tablecloth, respecting the elderly in starting to eat, and paying attention to the foods being halal or haram. It is highly recommended in Islam to eat food in congregation. This will attract the divine blessing. Another Iranian tradition is hospitality, which is very evident in spreading the tablecloth and serving. The Iranian tablecloth takes special colors in various times of feasts. For example, on the national feast of Nowruz or New Year feast, rice is made with vegetables and served with fish. But on Yalda night, which is the longest night of the year, pomegranate, various nuts, and watermelon are the ingredients of the tablecloth. Furthermore, for religious ceremonies of the morning month of Muharram and the blessed month of Ramadan, special foods are prepared as votives, which can be seen less frequently during the year. These include different kinds of halim, broth, dates, halwa, pastries like zulbia and bamiye. Dear listeners, Iran's traditional culinary system is based on principles which mainly focus health of foods. In other words, it is very important to see which foods should be eaten together to have the least negative effect on the health system. In view of this, dressings enjoy an important status in the Iranian cuisine and tablecloth. Thus, some dressings make one's temperament cold while others make it warm. As it has always been mentioned in Islam, it is very important for a food to be halal or religiously permitted. Therefore, some foods like pork and some drinks like alcohol have no place among Iranians, as they are Muslims. Today, scientific research has made it clear that the foods and drinks that are considered as haram or religiously forbidden in Islam are harmful for the body and spirit. When a tourist travels to a country, foods are among the first things which draw his or her attention. This has caused food tourism to find its way among nations and prove itself as a means of gaining revenues and promotion of cultural, historical, and religious aspects.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. Presently, we are discussing about the duties and the responsibilities of the messengers of God, and this is especially considering the situation of the societies before the coming of the Prophet. So basically, when you consider that, then you'll understand and appreciate the duties that the prophets had and what role they played in the society. And we mentioned previously that, of course, one of the main aims of the prophets and messengers is to create a society, or is to kind of formulate a social system that will, gear the people towards, the system of Tawheed. Rather, it will push them towards manifesting the whole idea of Tawheed, which is something that we have discussed previously to a certain degree. When we talk about that, we don't mean that that is the only aim, or rather, that is the final aim of the coming of the messengers. In fact, the people of the societies are primarily addressed by the prophets. Their souls, their spirituality, their goodness, these are actually addressed by the prophets. So the prophets really want perfection within the souls of the people, so that they can come closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the government systems and the social structures, they kind of assist this purpose to be achieved.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, when we talk about the general principles or the general, you can say, role of the prophets, that general role is with regards to the core and the essence of mankind, the internal dimension of mankind. And of course, when the prophets come, they want people to become pure. They want the people to become strong, so that first of all they help creating that society, and finally, in the light of that society and that social structure, human beings are able to progress and reach the highest levels possible in terms of greatness and spirituality. So, when the prophets were sent, so basically one of the first things that is mentioned here is that لِيَسْتَأْدُوهُمْ مِثَاقَ فِطْرَتِهِ, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent these prophets so that they are able, so that they can make the people materialize and fulfill that covenant that they had with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That covenant which is there within their essence with regards to God and with regards to Tawheed. And the second thing is that وَيُذَكِّرُوهُمْ مَنْ سِيَ نِعْمَتِهِ, and that he should, that they, and that they should remind the people what they have forgotten with regards to the blessings that he has given them. وَيَحْتَجُّ عَلَيْهِمْ بِالتَّبْلِيغِ, and so that he can complete the argument, so that the prophets come and complete the argument by giving the message, basically. وَيُثِيرُ لَهُمْ دَفَائِنَ الْعُقُولِ, and so that the hidden treasures that are within their intellects, within the people's intellects, can be, you know, extracted and opened up, and they can kind of flow from within their existence, so that their intellects become strong. وَيُرُوهُمْ آيَاتِ الْمَقْدِرَةِ, and so that Allah shows them and, you know, makes it clear for them or shows them His signs of power. So we can see that these are the reasons why the messengers came. Again, we notice that this relationship with the prophets, that the prophets had with the people, was something to do with their internal, their spiritual progress. And of course, these systems were there to allow that internal progress to happen.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we then realize that actually the purpose of the messengers is to make human beings to, you know, kind of do everything they can in their capacity so that mankind can grow, can be trained, and can achieve higher levels. And of course, that means that whatever we have as systems in the society should be geared towards that direction. So, for example, when Allah subhanahu, when Imam Ali alayhi salam says that one of the duties of the prophets is وَيُذَكِّرُوهُمْ مَنْ سِيَ نِعْمَتِهِ, so that he reminds them, okay, of the blessings that they have forgotten, that means that the government has to be such that people should always remember. It should be a reminder for people. It should be a system whereby this reminder always happens. It shouldn't be a system whereby people are you know, oblivious. It shouldn't be a system which encourages a state of obliviousness, like we have today in various societies and governments. That these societies and these governments actually encourage alcohol. They encourage nightclubs and discos. They encourage all of these things that are, that make people forget their duties. They make them forget the blessings of God. And because this is for the benefit of those governments. As long as people are oblivious of their purpose of creation, as long as people are oblivious about their rights and their duties, then those people who are higher above in enjoying the worldly amenities will be happier, will be merrier, will be enjoying. And therefore, we notice that this is the agenda of the oppressors and the disbelievers. But the agenda of the prophets is that they will create a system whereby people always remember, they are always aware, they are vigilant. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat Orbat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
The Western sanctions on Syria have killed innocent civilians, and the inaction of the West in aiding the Syrian people at this time is tantamount to abandoning those who could have been saved. If we know now that the sanctions blockade, why is it acceptable that the US only temporarily frees them? They should not be in place at all, and neither should U.S. forces occupy the Syrian territory. Sanctions collectively punish innocent Syrians who have already endured years of war, displacement, and disaster. Dear listeners, in this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truth Out wrote in its regard, "The devastating earthquake in Turkey and Syria has killed over 40,000 people, a number the United Nations has warned may escalate. The destruction is unfathomable. According to the UN, at least 870,000 people across Turkey and Syria are in urgent need of hot meals. In Syria, around 5.3 million people are in need of shelter. Over 1 million people in Turkey are living in temporary shelters. It feels like another punch in the gut after the horrors and anguish Syrians have already endured through years of war, displacement, and sanctions. Heartbreaking stories have emerged from Syria and Turkey. In one widely shared image, photographer Adam Altan memorialized the anguish of a father as he sat alone amidst the rubble holding onto his deceased 15-year-old daughter's hand. Stories of rescue have also ignited flickers of hope amid such profound despair. Rescuers pulled a 10-year-old girl to safety after she was trapped for 147 hours beneath a collapsed building. A newborn baby was rescued from the rubble after relatives found her still tied by her umbilical cord to her mother, who had sadly passed away. This earthquake is the latest crisis within a larger crisis in Syria, already fractured over a decade now. Over 300,000 people have been killed there since the war broke out in 2011. Prior to the earthquake, an estimated 6.7 million people were already internally displaced. Millions more were impoverished by US and European sanctions designed to strangle the Syrian economy. Additional US sanctions since 2020 have targeted key sectors, including the central bank, oil, energy, and construction. They have also blocked food, medicine, medical equipment, and other necessities. 90% of Syrians now live in poverty, and 12 million are food insecure, with more than half of Syria's infrastructure either destroyed or severely damaged by war. Sanctions have made reconstruction and economic recovery impossible. This was the situation before the earthquake struck. Months earlier, UN envoy Alina Duhan called for an end to Western sanctions, saying, "I urge the immediate lifting of all Western unilateral sanctions that severely harm human rights and prevent any efforts for early recovery, rebuilding, and reconstruction." Her recommendation has even greater urgency today. In a de facto admission that sanctions are hurting civilians, the U.S. regime recently agreed to open a 180-day window authorizing transactions related to earthquake relief efforts in Syria. Although a welcome development, it's only a short-term reprieve from these sanctions' far-reaching catastrophic impacts. For the U.S. regime, maintaining these failed sanctions while pledging to be a partner to the people of Syria is contradictory and counterproductive. They should be permanently lifted to allow Syrians the chance to finally catch their breath and begin to rebuild from these crises with dignity. The U.S. and international community must also redouble their diplomatic efforts toward ending the war instead of prolonging it. Also, according to RT, the effects of the devastating 7.8 magnitude earthquake which hit both Syria and Turkey earlier this month are being compounded by U.S. sanctions. But despite a temporary relaxation of restrictions on the war-torn and shaken country, problems still exist. Syrian provinces have still been left ill-prepared to deal with the scale of disaster that has befallen them and must now be given every support to reconstruct their country. According to authorities in Turkey and Syria, as many as 42,000 people have been killed by the devastating quakes, with at least 23 million people affected in total. millions have been temporarily displaced, and many more still await news on their loved ones and whether or not they survived. The situation as it stands is an utter disaster, and the full impact is impossible to convey in mere words. In Turkey's case, the international community's response was unanimous. Aid was pledged, teams arrived to relieve the suffering, and whatever the political frictions between Istanbul and some Western nations, a sense of universal humanitarian camaraderie prevailed. The Biden administration in Washington reacted to the natural disaster by pledging anything that Ankara needed, while the European Union mobilized emergency response and offered its Copernicus satellite mapping service to help first responders in Turkey. However, the situation has been very different for Syria, with only a few select nations quick to come to its aid. The U.S. regime stated that it would not cooperate with Damascus to deal with the carnage inside Syrian territory. The Syrian government officially requested help from the EU, which some EU states instantly refused to provide. The UK regime quickly came to aid of their NATO ally Turkey, but refused help to the suffering Syrians. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky tweeted his condolences to Turkey and its people in Turkish, but failed to acknowledge Syria at all. Syrians were not in the spotlight to receive help from the West and are actively being ignored in spite of the gravity of the situation facing them. Compounding the difficulties is a plethora of sanctions against the Damascus government, which were applied by the EU, the UK, and the US. The worst of these are perhaps the 2019 Khazar Act sanctions, which have severely crippled Syria's post-war economy and robbed the nation of the ability to reconstruct. The US sanctions have indeed been amended for a short period to allow relief aid to travel into Syria. But the problem with the sanctions is not just that they hindered aid from entering the country for days. The dire economic situation across Syria's provinces, a problem preceding the current crisis, has undermined the medical sector's capacity to deal with the sheer number of dead and injured following an earthquake of this magnitude. According to a number of UN experts, the sanctions imposed upon Syria were already causing a humanitarian crisis and should be lifted. With more than half of the vital infrastructure either completely destroyed or severely damaged, the imposition of unilateral sanctions on key economic sectors, including oil, gas, electricity, trade, construction, and engineering, have quashed national income and undermine efforts towards economic recovery and reconstruction. Alina Duhan, UN Special Rapporteur on Unilateral Coercive Measures and Humanitarian Rights, said last year. The UN has directly linked Syria's current cholera epidemic to Western sanctions, which have prevented rehabilitation and development of water distribution networks at a time when 12 million Syrians grapple with food insecurity. According to an underground account, during the first few days following the earthquake, there was not enough fuel to transport aid and rescue teams to affected areas quickly. In Syrian government-held areas, electricity only runs for a few hours per day under normal circumstances. Now, given the masses of displaced families, people are suffering in sub-zero temperatures at night. Exacerbating the issues is that while Syria is rich in natural gas and oil, the U.S. military, along with its proxy forces in northeast of the country, occupies a third of Syria's territory, including its oil and gas fields. The most fertile agricultural lands have also been stolen from the Syrian people by U.S. occupation, which was never granted congressional approval back in Washington. Piling onto that pressure, the fabricated regime of Israel also used the earthquake as an opportunity to claim that the Syrian government had requested aid from it, knowing this would reflect poorly on Damascus. The Syrian government denies this, and although the Zionist regime claims the aid would be directed to Syria, it was only sent to Turkey.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been narrated from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. This hadith is about the order of the universe, the nazm and the order existent in the universe. This is a subject which has been alluded to in many places in our religious text, in our scriptures, the Quran and the Hadith. And it is actually a proof for God's existence. In this beautiful Hadith, the Imam Baqir alayhi salam, said the following with regards to the following verse of Allah Most High. The verse in question is the following: "But whoever has been blind in this world will be blind in the hereafter." The Imam said, "Whoever does not see that there is a great creator behind the creation of the heavens and the earth, the alternating night and day, the orbits of the sun and the moon, and all the other wondrous signs, will be blind in the hereafter." Meaning, if somebody doesn't look at these signs and conclude from them, if somebody doesn't look at the order of the universe and conclude from it that there must be somebody behind this order, who has created this world and who has given it this beautiful order, then this person will be, you know, blind in the hereafter. You know, it's a reference to the fact that this person, he didn't believe in God in the hereafter, in this world. He didn't believe in God in this world, and he couldn't see God with the eye of his intellect, you know, by looking at these various signs. So there's no reason why God would allow him to, this truth, this verity, it will be manifested in the hereafter, and will appear in the hereafter as his blindness. He will come to God, but he won't be able to see him, just like he couldn't see him in this world, right? Even though God is present everywhere, similarly, God will be present in the hereafter, in the mahshar, but this person won't be able to see him, and won't be able to recognize him. Then the imam, in continuation, he said the following: this means he is blind to what he did not witness, and even more astray from the right way. In a similar tradition, it's been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that he said, if you saw a single door on its own from what normally comprises a pair of doors with a protruding attachment, would you ever imagine that this single door with a protrusion was created in such a way without purpose? No, rather you would certainly know that it was made in such a way to connect with another part, thus comprising the pair and providing a purpose for the protrusion. So you would expose the other component in order to unite it with the first one, and hence reach a useful purpose, in the same way you find a male animal, as if he is a part of a pair equipped for its female partner, and they unite in order to procreate and preserve the human race. So destroyed, defeated, and wretched are the claimants of philosophy. How did their hearts get blinded from this wonderful creation so as to deny the organization and purpose in it? Thank you for joining us here on The Key. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at order and its allusion and indication to the existence of God as the one who has ordered the universe. In the words of Imam Baqir alayhi salam, until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
Spotlight. Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.